Broadcasting all over the world from cinemageekly.com, it's the Cinema Geekly Podcast with Anthony Lewis and Glenn Bove.
If you only knew the power of the dark side.
It's time for the Cinema Geekly Podcast, episode 91, cinemageekly.com/premium. That's where we want everybody heading these days. There's a great big banner right on cinemageekly.com. Head on over there, because if you like the Cinema Geekly Podcast, we've got good news for you. Between Glenn, Aaron, my brother, Ben Knight, all of us, we're coming together to put just like a shit ton of extra podcasts up on the premium website right now, and you can gain access to it and help Cinema Geekly out at the same time for a meager $12, Glenn. It's just an incredible price. We're essentially raping ourselves, I think, is what it boils down to, is that we're doing all this extra work and putting out all this bonus content for a measly $12, and that's not for a month. That's for not even for 6 months. That's for a whole year, a whole calendar year of podcasts for $12, and that money is going towards our podcast equipment upgrade fund and our helping pay off the server fund. And we're going to be needing to upgrade that server fairly soon as well, because as we mentioned, I believe on one of the previous episodes, we have now exceeded our backup limit, and our host is no longer backing up all of our files because there's literally too much data on the server. That is how many podcasts we have up there right now. But we just put a ton of new podcasts up, and we didn't even talk about it from on the last episode. So let me just run through a couple of these real quick, because there's a bunch of them. We did a third episode of Level Your Gear, where we welcomed back to the podcast Cinema Geekly podcast alumni Jason Schmidt, who was on the first, I want to say, like 3 or 4 episodes. He joined us on the third episode of Level Your Gear called We Fixed Gamergate for You. And there's a couple of episodes of Who Made Who, where we talk about the last three, between those two episodes, we talk about the last three episodes of Doctor Who. Glenn and I nailed down another episode of the Gotham podcast talking Penguin's Umbrella. And we just got done doing the fifth episode of Flashing Arrow talking the secret origin of Felicity Smoke, that episode of Arrow. And also the fourth episode of Level Your Gear with what could be considered an odd title. I'm just going to come out and say it, Glenn. The fourth episode is titled Penis Simulator 2K15. So in case anybody, if that piques your interest, man, $12 for an entire year of podcasts. The back catalog, everything that's coming out. We're going to have new podcasts coming. Doctor Who is ending shortly for the season, and we've got new podcasts that are going to be coming into to take their place as well. Glenn, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm just trying to get some other podcasts lined up.
Oh yes,
it's odd. The amount of people who don't want to record the things we talk about.
Yeah, it's shocking how many people are like, I'll steer clear of this. My name's going to be attached to this in some form. Yeah, no thanks. But nevertheless, we are endeavoring to create more content for the people who dig what it is that we do over here, which is quite a few of you people. If everyone wanted to get on board, I can't even tell you how immensely it would help. First, let's get this out of the way, like what's going on the website first, because we do have a couple of new reviews. There's a third review on the way that I have not put up yet from Stephanie. She reviewed Big Hero 6, that Disney animated feature that mm-hmm. everyone is raving about. She liked it. An associate of mine called it the best Spider-Man film he's ever seen, was his review of it. So if everyone's looking for a good Spider-Man movie, check out Big Hero 6, I guess. But Dan O'Neill has a review up on the website for Birdman, which is, speaking of rave reviews, that one is getting a ton of them kind of all over the place. That's going to be is that going to be an Oscar contender, Glenn?
I'm sorry, what? I didn't catch the name.
Oh, Birdman, the Michael Keaton picture.
Oh yeah, dude, that is like everything. That's pretty much. It's pretty much gonna. It probably is going to win Best Picture, and it probably is going to win Best Original Screenplay.
Really? It's that strong, huh?
Oh, yeah. Everybody loves it.
Have you seen it yet? I want to see it really bad, but...
No, I haven't yet.
Dan gave it a very sturdy 4.5 geeky glasses, so... a very positive review from one Dan O'Neill. Yeah, that's on our hit list, man, to check out, because that definitely seems like a big Oscar contender. Another movie that's probably going to be Oscar contender, I'm sure, in some form or fashion, is Interstellar, which Stephanie has a review up for. She gave it 4 out of 5 geeky glasses. And Glenn, you also saw it. You're in the midst of doing a review, I believe, right? And
yeah, I am. That's why I got to go to the lab.
I guess this movie is kind of drawing some very clear lines. There are people who really seem to enjoy it and people who really don't seem to enjoy it. Without destroying your review ahead of time, kind of, where do you sit on this movie?
I don't know. I guess, you know, we kind of talked about it before. It's just one of those things. It's a Christopher Nolan movie. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, he's very divisive. Either people absolutely love him or they absolutely despise him. And, well, Neil deGrasse Tyson gave, you know, a thumbs up on the science.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So
I would hope so. I mean, one of his colleagues was a scientific advisor on this. So I would hope so.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's that. It's one of those movies. It's like it's like a David O. Russell film, like American Hustle or Silver Linings Playbook.
Mm-hmm.
You're either going to care about the plot or you're going to care about the characters. And if you care about the characters, it's a much better movie.
Yeah.
And that's generally my thing. You ever hear me comment on, you know, even Arrow or all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I generally talk about the characters first because I don't really care about plot. I care about characters. So,
right. Well, I mean, I've seen movies where, I don't know, like I really enjoyed Daniel Day-Lewis's character in There Will Be Blood, but I don't like the movie There Will Be Blood because it wasn't particularly interesting to me outside of his performance. So I'm kind of on the opposite spectrum here where I like, I need good character and good plot. I kind of need both of them. Like if one is missing from the other, like if there's a really good story in there, but it's performed poorly, I'm probably not going to like it. If it's, you know, a really neat character, but the movie overall doesn't grab my attention, I'm probably not going to like it for that reason. I kind of need a perfect storm. Are you telling me Interstellar might not necessarily be a perfect storm of character and plot?
I mean, it's just, to me, there's not necessarily a plot. I mean, the plot is, it's about the characters. It's not a, know. I loved it. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I do need to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
I know you brought up like, you know, and other things and other people brought up, you know, like Dark Knight Rises, a movie you love while you're watching it, but when you look back at it, you don't know why.
Right.
And that movie is the same thing. Like there are so many instances in this movie I absolutely love. And while I was watching it, it's visually exciting. I mean, it's probably granted, this was a much smaller scale, but it's kind of the same way in how it's filmed. Mm-hmm. Drive is just a very beautiful looking movie, and that's exactly what this movie is. Like, it is absolutely gorgeous,
right?
And they can cap. I mean, he just captures everything in the camera. He's got a different cinematographer for this, the guy who did Her,
right,
and other stuff. It's visually, it's amazing, and I mean, Matthew McConaughey is really good in it. I understand if people won't like it. I completely understand people who don't like it.
Mm.
But I've always been in the Nolan camp. So, I mean, it's, I do like the movie.
on the spoilery side of things, for people who, if you don't want to be spoiled, skip ahead, feel free. But one thing that I have heard, it's really kind of like a minor criticization of the movie, but, cause people were like, look, with Batman, when he was doing the Batman movies, you kind of can't really do exactly whatever you want to do because, you know, Batman is this other property or whatever that makes it easy. Like he couldn't just, you know, kill Batman if he felt like it. Cause you know, there's other people at the chopping block or whatever that would be like, no, you can't do that. but with this movie, people were like, I've seen a few people who were upset that they just didn't kill Matthew McConaughey. Like he just didn't die. People thought that maybe his character should have. And, those people who were criticizing it said that, Nolan is like, they said he feels like the director who wants you to feel like you're watching an art movie, but you're really watching a mass consumption, mainstream popcorn movie. Like it's like a faux intellectual film, I guess. Right. Like Chris Nolan, is a painter, but what he paints is boobs. So you have a guy who's like looking at a big picture of boobs and he's staring at boobs, but at the same time he feels a little highfalutin because it's a painting of boobs. Like it's art. It's high art. It's not a porn magazine. But at the same time, you're still just, you know, you like it because it's boobs. I mean, he does kind of movies sort of like that a little bit. Like I kind of wish he wouldn't have been hesitant to just be like, you know, kill that guy. He's dead. But, you know, it's never particularly great business to kill a main character and end a movie on kind of a downer. And this movie doesn't really end on a downer, right?
He even talks about it with this movie is he wanted this movie to provoke, you know, human curiosity and hope. And that, mm-hmm. I mean, look, there's a ton of bad shit that happens in this movie. I mean, it is a very bleak movie throughout, but there's always just this underlying thing of hope. And that's where, you know, Murphy is, you know, Matthew McConaughey's daughter. I mean, that's like what she's supposed to do is she's the best and worst of us. And look, I'm all for it. I mean, anything I write for fun or whatever, like I always kill the protagonist, mainly because I like it when my hero dies because the whole point of being a hero is sacrifice. Well, you can't really get much more than, you know, basically dying for the cause. And I don't with this. Yeah, I mean, I would have liked to him. I mean, him being dead or not dead is fine. It was just. There's a pretty ridiculous moment towards the end. It's not ridiculous, and you know, it's just I didn't like the way it was done. And you were talking about where, and this is where it goes with Nolan. Like he does try to be something more than what he is. And you know, I think he handles scale really well as far as like he can create a believable universe and can just throw, and he doesn't, you know, overdo it as far as, you know, how pretty something's going to look, because a lot of it is just set design. Right. It's not just completely computer all the time. And so for that, I mean, I don't know. He's like a really good set designer. Now, would I want him doing this massive epic? No, probably not. I mean, he's not Steven Spielberg, but granted, no one's Steven Spielberg. I mean, he's like the only guy who can go big and small, and you know, you still can tell it's the same guy. And I think with Nolan, he just kind of gets lost a little bit. But the reason why I always like his movies is because you can tell there's a lot of heart and care. It's not like Michael Bay where it's just a money grab.
Right.
I mean, these are essentially properties he's created, he's come up with, and he's helped developed with him and his brother. So that's just something I always kind of appreciate. I mean, yeah, he is essentially a painter who's painting boobs, but these boobs are, you know, pretty amazing. So no, I mean, I like I said, I completely understand. And I like if people who say it and don't like it, I think the rating's like 72, 71 or something like that percent of Rotten Tomatoes.
Yep.
And I can see where they come from. However, I mean, this movie is Christopher Nolan at his best and it's Christopher Nolan at his worst.
Yep.
And his worst isn't, you know, awful. It's not god awful. You know, there's just, look, there's just certain things I don't care about. Like I said, if he can, he'll pack an emotional punch into you every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And for me, that makes up some of the ridiculous logic that he has. And a lot of people can't see past that, but then again, right. They think it's okay to watch something like The Avengers and say it's amazing when there's tons of plot holes, but just because fun,
yeah,
lighthearted, you can get away with it. It's just his tone, mm-hmm. I think, gets in the way of a lot of the lightheartedness that people are able to overlook in certain things. Yeah.
I mean, and that's not like a thing for me either. Like plot holes normally are not a bother for me.
Yeah. Jurassic Park has a massive plot hole and no one really gives a shit about it. I mean, how does a T-Rex scale a 100-foot wall seconds prior where it was level? And then all of a sudden it's, you know, there's a giant canyon where a car gets thrown down. No one really cares because it's well done.
Yes.
And that, to me, I feel like no one tries to do that, but he can't quite get away with it all the time.
I mean, see, that thing you mentioned with Jurassic Park, it's that, people just don't really notice it. And if you don't really notice it, then it's not that bad. Like, some of the plot holes in The Dark Knight Rises, to me, were the problem I had with it was, you know, when I was in the car on the way home, they stuck out to me almost immediately. And, like, I never once thought about, I mean, I heard about the Jurassic Park thing. Somebody mentioned it to me, you know, years and years ago, but it took me years and years for somebody to mention that and for me to go, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. But, you know, so it depends, like, how obvious it is and how detracting from the story it is, and how, you know, central to the plot it is. Like, if there's a plot hole that's almost completely central to the actual story of the movie, you know, that really sticks out. That's why you've got to be careful. I mean, there's no movie without a plot hole. They all have them, but the further they are from the actual, like, the further they are in importance from the actual plot of the movie, the less people notice them and the less people care about them, you know, things like that.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, like in The Dark Knight where the Joker comes into the Bruce Wayne's banquet for Harvey Dent,
mm-hmm.
and he throws Rachel Dawes out the window and he jumps and saves her. Like, that's the end of the scene. He just left, you know, the Joker with a bunch of thugs with, like, the richest people in Gotham.
Yeah, he just left them up there.
In his own penthouse. But we don't bring that up because why? That's not what the scene's about. And so,
right. And it's, and it doesn't,
there's a lot of things I can forgive because it's like, that's not what the focus is. You know, in his exception, you know, it's like, it's who, you know, the dream stuff's awesome, but that's not what the movie's about. The movie's about a man getting over the loss of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, we can stop talking about it and I'll have a review up and I may have a podcast about it because I have a friend who absolutely loves the movie,
mm-hmm.
and deals with satellites for a living. So,
well, there you go.
We'll see.
That'd be super fun. We haven't had a side B in a long time, so that'd be awesome.
No.
So here's some news. Star Wars Episode 7 has wrapped. The shooting has wrapped anyway. And when they did that, they decided they were going to release the title, and it's interesting in a couple of ways because they not only released the title, they released the logo for the film. And that in and of itself is actually kind of interesting. It's something that some people have noticed, some people have not noticed at all. But the title of the movie is Star Wars The Force Awakens, which I don't know, Glenn, how would you take that title? Would you take that as kind of like maybe a minor poke to the prequel movies a little bit, like a tiny jab? To say that maybe Star Wars has sort of been on ice for a really long time.
Well, I mean, what, the last Star Wars movie came out, you know, like, what, a decade ago? Has it been 10 years? Like, two? Maybe 06 or something. If it was like the midichlorian count is non-existent, then yeah, that would definitely be like a jab.
hopefully they do try to just ignore that.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I don't know. I mean, George Lucas took the best things about being a Jedi and the fact anyone can do it and just ripped that away from you.
Yeah, made it like a virus.
A generation later.
Yeah, it's a genetic defect or something. I think it's probably a little more simple, right? This is following Episode 6. Luke is the only Jedi, essentially, right? And presumably this is going to be launching a whole new wave of them. So The Force Awakens seems to make quite a bit of sense. It's not a bad name either.
It could be good force or bad. No, I mean, At first, I was like, what? I thought it was a dumb name at first, and then I'm like, well, just think about all the other Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Out of the last three
Star Wars, A New Hope names. Is, like, super corny, but...
Oh, sure, sure. But for the time, though, it fits okay. But I'm just thinking out of the last three Star Wars movies, we've had kind of two crummy names. Like the, you know what? Maybe the Phantom
Menace. Revenge of the Sith.
Well, I was going to go with the first two. Like Revenge of the Sith is fine because I think that was, that's a super insidey nerd, reference to originally, episode 6 was going to be Revenge of the Jedi and yeah. They changed it because they thought it sounded too sinister. So that title I am totally cool with, but, and I'm sure maybe the Phantom Menace kind of sounded cool at first, but put hindsight in there. Now it's just a stupid title. And Attack of the Clones is a ridiculously bad title. This is by
far. It is awful. I mean, it's almost as bad as like Transformers 3, Dark of the Moon.
Dark of the Moon. Attack of the Dark.
Because they use Dark Side of the Moon. It's just like they couldn't do it because of Pink Floyd. Like that's just so funny. Yeah,
they desperately wanted Pink Floyd to sign off on that, but no go. They just didn't have enough time or money, Glenn. So those are Pink Floyd songs. The other thing about
it's just another brick in the wall of money to me.
It's just us or them. Okay, the other thing about the Star Wars title that I find interesting is when Lucas did the prequels, right? It was Star Wars Episode 1, Star Wars Episode 2, and this is kind of hearkening back to when Star Wars first came out. It was just called Star Wars, and then eventually it was just called Star Wars A New Hope after a while, but people never really called it Episode 4, 5, or 6. Until much later, and kind of just calling it Star Wars: The Force, and not even including the episode title, I think is just kind of neat. Like they don't need to do that, and they really don't actually. They really don't need to put the episode title in there. I mean, it's nice for people who want to count the episodes and watch them as they are numbered. But you
don't tell Aaron that because he wants his shit numbered. He doesn't want colons. God damn it.
Well, no, Aaron. I think Aaron would be like, well, no, they're numbered incorrectly because you have to start with 4 and 5 and then use the others as flashbacks before you go into 6. I think that's the whatever that system was that somebody had developed. Or no, you skip 1 entirely and then watch 2 and 3 as flashbacks, I think is what it boiled down to.
Huh. They both still suck, but...
Oh, yeah. It's like there's really no getting around the Hayden Christensen-ing of those movies. I'm not even putting the blame entirely on him either, the George Lucas-ing of those movies. He was never particularly good with handling interpersonal relationships. He's
His best movie is the one he had almost nothing to do with.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, all those early Star Wars movies, yeah, I mean, and Empire and Jedi, he didn't even direct, right?
Yeah, he didn't direct Empire Strikes Back because of Directors Guild going on strike, so he had to have a director that wasn't, because Steven Spielberg was going to do it.
Yeah.
And then they went on strike, so he had to have someone else.
Irving Guild or something, yeah.
Yeah, Ivan Kirshner or something.
Yes. So, Glenn, let's ask this question again, because I feel like everybody asked this question the last time this news made the rounds, but we'll ask it again. Is Pixar taking it one time? Are they going to the well one too many times here? LA Times reported that Pixar has announced that they are making a fourth Toy Story movie. John Lasseter is returning to direct.
Directed a movie and. What was the last movie he directed? Like Toy Story 2?
Ooh, maybe. I don't know if he's done anything since.
Then I know he didn't do Nemo.
Something to do with Cars? I thought he had. I thought like that was his
baby. Oh, you're right. You know, he did direct Cars because that was like his baby. Because he came up with the idea of Cars when he was finishing up Toy Story 2.
Yeah. Which is a shame because that was kind of the beginning of the downfall of Pixar, in my opinion. But.
I mean, they've had a couple of okay ones. I mean,
oh, sure. I mean, it's not like they haven't recovered some. They have. I'm trying to see. Last thing he directed.
I really think it was Cars, which is, I mean, that's just a monstrosity.
It may have been. The last thing he directed was Cars 2, although he is he directed Cars 2? Holy shit. I just read it because it was there. I didn't even realize that I had said Cars 2. He's apparently attached to direct Cars 3. So there you go. This Toy Story 4 is coming in 2017. Here's the thing. People got uppity when they announced the first Toy Story sequel. And Toy Story 2, I think, was definitely better than the first movie.
Yes.
And then they announced a Toy Story 3, and people were like, sacrilege! Burn them at the stake!
And then we all thought Toy Story 3 was better than 2.
Oh, yeah. Toy Story 3 was incredible. So here we are.
Oh, Jesus. That move. Between that and Up, holy cow.
Yeah.
So, man, talk about 10-minute sequences that just get to you.
Yeah, so, I mean, here we are. So here we are again, right, with Toy Story 4 being announced. Now, Glenn, this is a tough precipice we face here. Are we willing to jump off the precipice of, like, sacrilege, burn him at the stake? Or are we willing to be like, you know what, man, you're 3 for 3 on this. We're going to take your word for it.
Say they're 3 for 3 and then it turns out they're not. So if we keep hating it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
then it will be good.
This is a terrible idea. I think essentially.
I don't know where are they going to go with it. I mean, Andy already pawned them off. Look, there's only one question I ever wanted answered. And that was because it was not addressed in Toy Story 3. Besides when they say like Bo Peep. Yeah. Like right. Bo Peep. And I'm like, what the fuck? No. What the fuck happened to Bo Peep? I need answers, goddamn. That was like, when that happened, I was like, what? Excuse me? Now, if they do a fourth one, they throw Bo Peep in there. It better not. I want her to be dead or whatever happens to toys. Because I just thought that was like such a gut-wrenching moment. And the director that taken away from me in this fourth one.
But, well, I mean, I too am curious.
I just don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they have a new... And we've already seen how toys are whenever you're a little kid and that kind of stuff. And at least like for my generation, every movie that has come out, I have been the exact same age as Andy.
Right. I mean, yeah.
And
I mean,
Toy Story... take that emotional attachment away because he's no longer there.
Right. I mean, Toy Story 3 was essentially about, having to grow up and to move on. Even for the toys, they kind of had... to do that, they had to be willing to accept this whole new life, and Andy had to accept that his childhood is gone. He has to go become an adult, and he's that scene at the end. I mean, god damn, that scene at the end where they're all kind of sitting out on the porch and watching Andy leave or whatever at the end, like, that's heart wrenching. I mean, that's as bad as when they all think they're gonna die in that inferno. Like, that's I can't believe we're even done. I mean,
I want you to imagine this. Like, this is how I'm going into this movie. I had just moved halfway across the country.
Right.
I had just moved into my apartment on campus. Was at school for a week doing summer courses. Mm-hmm. Went with my roommate and hit a couple of his friends to go see this movie. And then it's like Andy's moving away, packing up his stuff, getting rid of his shit. And it's like, oh my god, I just did this like 3 weeks ago.
I'm Andy.
but I am serious. Like, I have been the exact same age as Andy every year, every time these movies come out. Now that, like, I don't know, like, Andy was like subconsciously, I think for everybody, was just you just saw it through his eyes. Mm-hmm. And now that's taken away, and you have to like start over with this little girl that we don't care about who rescues toys.
Yeah. I mean, she seems like a nice enough kid, but I just don't know where they can go with. You're right.
Yeah, I don't know
where they can go with it. But you know what? We said that about Toy Story 3 too, and we're like, where can they go with this? What can they do? And they told an amazing story that was fun for kids and for grown-ups, ripped your heart out and threw it up against the wall. and then set it on fire in a garbage can. So, you know, maybe they will surprise us again and find a new way to tell some sort of story that makes us want to cry about these digitally created toys that come to life. I can't even believe I'm saying this, but yeah, I mean, there's a reason Kevin Smith calls the third movie Schindler's Toy Box. Like, it's just,
yeah, no, shit.
It's just like the most heart-wrenching movie. It's ridiculous. A movie like that has no right to tug on my heartstrings in such a way, but lo and behold. So yeah, I guess that's really the question. It's like, what left do they have to offer? But I think for the sake of hoping that it's going to be good, we're going to say this is a terrible idea, right? And they should just leave.
Yeah, it's a god awful idea. I don't know. This trying to get money and stuff.
Oh yeah, they should leave well enough alone. I say yes.
Yeah,
we're a couple of set in our way movie fanatics, Glenn.
Yeah, but franchises are overrated. Who needs them?
Absolutely. Speaking of franchises, DC rumor time. we just got done talking not a couple of episodes ago about all of the DC movies that are coming out, including the super / anti-hero Suicide Squad film that they're doing, and there is a rumor from The Wrap that says the people behind this Suicide Squad film are eyeing up Jared Leto for a role in the movie. Now, if that kind of sounds familiar, it's because it was not long ago that Jared Leto was being looked at for Doctor Strange on Marvel's side of things. Now, here's where things get really interesting. The second rumor that came from The Wrap is saying that not only are they interested in putting Jared Leto in this movie, but they're eyeing him to play the Joker, which... I believe Aaron was quoted as saying so wrong, and Glenn was quoted as saying no. Were you saying no to Aaron so wrong, or were you saying
no? No, I said no. That's three separate posts of no.
So, and there's more to this as well, right? There's more to the rumor now. There's
More of the rumor now.
Okay, so what's the other bit that's been added to this?
The other part is that Margot Robbie from Wolf of Wall Street is rumored to be or the one in her or is already casted as Harley Quinn.
Right, which we had heard earlier was not going to even be in this movie until people said that. And then everyone was like, what? And then maybe they.
Yeah, why would you not have probably the most known character in it? Oh, whatever.
So first, let's tackle the Jared Leto thing, right?
Ugh,
Is Joker now in the books? Is Joker part of Suicide Squad or no?
No. Harley Quinn is, but he is not.
Right, and obviously those two are attached. Obviously,
yeah, they are attached.
What purpose would the Joker serve then? Would they? He seems like beyond reproach for somebody that they would try to use in the Suicide Squad. Would he be the target, maybe, of the Suicide Squad?
More than likely, he would be the target. Or, I mean, I just recently watched Assault on Arkham again. Mm-hmm. So they could definitely do something, you know, that route of them going into Arkham, and you would need Harley to know the ins and outs, and he's just kind of there, and I don't, you know, and shenanigans ensues. Yeah, but I mean, definitely the target. I could see that being a thing.
So what was the birth of your dislike for the? Is it just that you don't think Leto is right for the part, or that you don't like the involvement of the Joker in this at all, or what is it?
Both. I mean, if they're trying to make it like where he's the rail thin Joker, he's just about perfect for it. I don't know if Jared Leto has it in him because he's, you know, he's very soft spoken for a singer.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever he just regularly talks and stuff. And I mean, yes, he makes a gorgeous woman, but it's just, I've already seen him with makeup on and lipstick.
Sure.
I don't know. I'd just rather it be someone else. I wouldn't know who I would want to be the Joker. Cause
right.
You know, I thought, you know, like everybody else, I thought the Heath Ledger thing was like, what the hell?
He kind of nailed it, yeah.
Yeah, look how that turned out. So I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with the guy they have voicing him right now, Troy Baker, because he kind of, you know, he's thin and stuff, so
the,
why not? But I just,
I mean, if they're putting Joker in this movie... To me, it's obvious, like, that's their play here, because Joker's not going to be in the Dawn of Justice movie. And I think they feel like, since Suicide Squad is the follow-up to that, and my guess is they've thought for a couple of minutes that, like, oh, you know what? Maybe nobody's heard of this guy even, or this group. And yeah, like, we need a hook. We need a hook to get people in. Like, this movie with the Suicide Squad, but they're fighting the Joker! you know, it'll be like Suicide Squad in small letters, and it's like, versus the Joker in huge letters. Like that.
Yeah, his name carries that weight. So
yeah, like that would be the selling point or whatever. I mean, I just, you know, to me, irregardless of what you think of the performance of Heath Ledger, even if you don't think it's a good performance, you have to admit that the majority of people do. So whoever steps into that role he's
got a piece of metal to prove it. So.
There's a high bar. So yes. I don't envy anybody who steps into that role. I don't care who it is. I don't care how accomplished or anything. There's just a ridiculously high bar now with fans that they need to meet. So kudos to anybody who's willing to take it on. And I would not wish to be you in a million years. What do you think of the potential Harley Quinn casting?
Oh, awesome. I mean, whenever they said her, I was like, oh yeah, I could see that. Mm-hmm. Because she is, oof, man.
Yeah, but the,
yeah, and the she's Harley like, Quinn, I know Harley she's Quinn voices, tiny and that kind of stuff. So
the Harley Quinn voice has always been a turnoff for me, though. So I don't know. I don't know how that would.
It's the J. Yeah, no, I mean, I highly doubt they would make her.
The animated series Harley Quinn.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, she look. You can be bonkers and not have that voice.
Yeah. it's just that it's such a it's I mean it's a tremendous voice, but it doesn't lend itself to me thinking, oh, she's hot. I'd like to date a woman whose voice is that absolutely annoying. Like, it does not lend itself to that at all.
But like, you know, she is like, you know, she is short and that kind of stuff. So I mean, whenever they say it, like, she looks the part. So
yeah, I mean, I think they need those characters for this movie if they're gonna. I mean, I saw the name at first and I'm like, really? They're gonna put the Joker in Suicide Squad? But then I'm like, well, they haven't built up their universe like Marvel has, and they're just throwing this movie right out after Batman. They need something to lure people into the theaters to give it a shot, because I don't know, based off of the Batman versus Superman thing, if up until now they have not done a connected universe. Everything has kind of been on its own, you know. So they've run the possibility that after Batman versus Superman, people are like, eh, whatever. They see Suicide Squad like the DC movie, and they don't feel like there's any tie to the previous movie. They might just feel like, oh, well, it's skippable. And I feel, you know, that putting it in that context. I gotta think, if that's where they're going, that's why they're doing it. I can't imagine that they would just put him in there haphazardly. I think it's got to be like that has to be the lure to get people to go see it. Is my thinking?
Oh yeah, I mean I mean, you could probably just have a standalone Joker movie and have Batman in it, and it will make more, you know, make just as much money as regular Batman movie. I mean, he's one villain who's as popular as the hero. So,
mm-hmm. So. Hey man, that was quick. Let's hop into the box office report for this week. We have not done this the last couple of weeks. So we've got here are the box office results that came out. Number five is Fury, that Shia LaBeouf and what's his name,
Brad Pitt,
the handsome guy. Yeah. I was the less famous guy, Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
That fell from number three to number five, made $5.6 million. Ouija, I can't believe they even turned that into a movie. But, well, I mean, I guess I'm not surprised they've used Ouijas in other horror movies before. But, yeah, it's just a ridiculous concept. As I told Aaron, it's the concept is so ridiculous. If you want to disprove... other than the fact that, like, Parker Brothers makes it, if you want to disprove the power of the Ouija board, just have a blind person do it and see what they come up with. I think you'd be surprised at the results.
Oh my god, he's speaking in tongues.
Oh, that's what it is. Ouija fell all the way from number one to number four. It dropped a big 45% from its first week or this is in its third week. I guess it was on the top of the charts for a couple of weeks. It did 5.8 million. Gone Girl actually bumped up a spot. It was number four last week, and now it's back up to number three, and it did 6.2 million. Interstellar debuted at number two with a fairly strong 47.5 million opening weekend. I have to presume that that has got to be a little disappointing considering all the advertising and the names attached and the director attached and the fact that the production budget was $165 million.
I thought it was a really odd time for them to release the movie.
Yeah. I mean,
when I saw November 7th, I was like, okay, I understand you don't want to go against Hunger Games, but, I know why Nolan probably wanted it back. Cause he wanted as close to a weekend holiday and trying to get that Oscar, cred that he desperately seeks.
That being said, they popped it open a little early in the foreign markets where it has actually made quite a bit of money worldwide. Interstellar's already at $132.5 million. So it's It's doing okay, but thanks almost entirely to the foreign market. Like, it opened meekly in the United States, which is actually kind of surprising to me. I was shocked. I figured that would have been an easy, like, $60 million opening or something like that.
Well, I think it had a pretty tough competition this weekend.
Oh, it did. Yeah. Big Hero 6, the Disney movie, is the one that debuted at number one. With a much stronger 56.2 million opening weekend, and by the way, that movie has the same production budget as Interstellar. For the record, 165 million.
Warner Brothers and Disney going at it again. Who knew?
Let's take a look at the movies that are going to be opening this weekend. First, let's touch on the limited releases, aka the movies most of you will never get to see until they come out on DVD, Blu-ray, or Netflix. There's Rosewater, which is actually the movie that Jon Stewart, yes, that Jon Stewart directed from
it's
The Daily Show.
It's supposed to be really good.
I have heard it is good. It is about somebody who is actually in a spot on one of their shows, on The Daily Show, and this guy was captured by the Iranian government and was being interrogated as a spy, and in an absolutely too ridiculous to be... fake scene. Normally it's too ridiculous to be true, but in this case, too ridiculous to be fake because it actually did happen. The Iranian government showed him their evidence that he was a spy, and it was the clip from The Daily Show where he met with Jason Jones, where Jason Jones was pretending to be a spy talking to him, and they used this segment as proof that he was actually a spy. They held him for 6 months, and this is not a comedy either. This is a straight up drama as well. And apparently, I've heard it is quite good. So there's that. That's coming out. Also coming out in limited release is The Horseman, which is not a movie about... Oh, no, it's The Homesman. For a minute there, I'm like, it's The Horseman. Is this about, like, Ric Flair and Arn Anderson and late 80s, early 90s WCW? But it is not. It's The Homesman. I misread it. My apologies. It's a limited release, but with a very big cast. Tommy Lee Jones, Hilary Swank, Meryl Streep, and Haley Steinfeld. I'm going with Meryl Streep from now on, Glenn. That's her name. William Fichtner is in this, James Spader, John Lithgow. I have no idea what this is about, but the cast is amazing. It looks like something out of Little House on the Prairie, so maybe it's a remake of that film. That's what I'm going to go with, Glenn. Unless you have more insight on this movie.
It's definitely not a remake of Little House on the Prairie.
Okay. It's currently sitting at 73% on Rotten Tomatoes with 22 reviews in. Before somebody sends in an email, yes, I'm aware that it is Meryl Streep. I was just coming off of Hilary Swank, and I read Meryl Streep's name too quickly. My apologies to Meryl Streep fans.
You can still send emails.
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to, go ahead. But oh, and I should mention that Rosewater is at 74% on Rotten Tomatoes right now as well. Another limited release picture, Foxcatcher, is coming out. That has Steve Carell, Channing Tatum, Mark Ruffalo, and Vanessa Redgrave in it.
Good.
Yeah, so it's like it's a psychological drama. And apparently it's being directed by, if I'm reading this correctly, Bennett Miller, who I believe did Moneyball, which is one of my favorite as a baseball movies of all time. Yeah, I don't know much else about the movie, but I know that it is a psychological drama, and I know that it's being reviewed incredibly well right now. It's 92% on Rotten Tomatoes right now out of nearly 50 reviews. So that one is garnering a lot of attention. Do you know what that one's about?
I mean, it's based on a true story, so I can, you know, spoiler.
Okay. Do you know what it's based about?
Yeah, it's about... Channing Tatum gets taken, basically starts getting trained by Steve Carell for the USA Olympic team.
Mm-hmm.
Because he really wants the gold and he thinks he can do it. And Mark Ruffalo is his older brother that trains him.
Okay.
And Steve Carell is pretty jealous of their relationship.
Hmm.
So
and it's a
hilarity ensues.
Because of Steve Carell, of course. Well, we can get our hilarity from... Beyond the Lights, Glenn. That's a wide release movie this week. Somehow Foxcatcher is not getting a wide release, but
it's in December.
This Beyond the Lights movie is getting a wide release. About some pop singer, hip hop.
Oh, it's that thing they keep saying, the creators or writer of Love and Basketball, that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no.
Minnie Driver is in it, Glenn.
Yeah, I really don't care.
But she was in Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, that was when she was, you know, not older looking.
But Glenn, Machine Gun Kelly is in this movie, and not the famous gangster from the rum running days. I'm talking about the really tattooed up, incredibly skinny hip hop white guy. Doesn't that entice you to watch this movie more?
No.
Okay.
I'll just watch that TV show Empire when it comes out.
The other wide release, and this is the big one for the week, is Dumb and Dumber 2, starring, of course, Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels, and also in it is Kathleen Turner, Rob Riggle, Laurie Holden, hockey player, according to this dude for reals, Cam Neely, hockey player Cam Neely is in this movie. And Jennifer Lawrence is also listed in the cast. She must be making a cameo, or something along those lines. Here's the thing with this movie.
20 years too late.
You know what? I'm pissed at this movie because I feel like as an adult, I have moved past this like I can't watch the first Dumb and Dumber movie anymore. And I never watched the really terrible prequel they tried to make, whatever it was, When Harry Meets Lloyd or something, right? You remember when they tried to do that?
Yeah.
With kind of like lookalikes of them, but younger. Here's the thing that I'm hating about this. I'm watching the commercials, and every time the commercials come on, it's like, I have no desire to watch this movie. Yet I still find myself giggling like a little kid, like six times during the stupid commercial. And I can't help it for some stupid reason. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's like, it's got to be the nostalgia kicking in, right? Like seeing Jim Carrey just be like the Jim Carrey I remember from when I was, you know, 11 and 12 and like watching Ace Ventura, Pet Detective and shit like that. That's got to be what it is. But what it really boils down to is I'm still not going to see the movie. But unfortunately for my sanity, I did giggle at the commercials. Is this something you're interested in seeing?
Only for nostalgia.
Yeah,
and I'll probably see it in Redbox or something.
Well, it's got the death stamp of no critical reviews yet. So it has not been released. It's not been pre-screened for critics, which usually means not great.
Yeah, and the Fairley Brothers haven't made anything good since like when There's Something About Mary.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, with what, that was 99? That was like the last funny movie they really made. Three Stooges.
That Ringer. Was bad. They did The Heartbreak Kid.
Yeah.
Bobby Farrelly was a director. I don't know if the Farrelly brothers directed Fever Pitch, but that movie got above 60% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, isn't that that Jimmy Fallon movie?
Yeah, that's the Jimmy Fallon Red Sox baseball movie, yeah.
Oh, they had to change the ending because the Red Sox won the World Series when they were filming it.
good Lord, this list, that Shallow Hal, Osmosis Jones, Me, Myself, and Irene.
Man, I wish I was bad at stuff and I could keep getting jobs.
That's incredible, right? Yeah.
I mean, I do like Myself and Irene, but...
There's Something About Mary is their highest rated film easily, 83%.
Oh, I mean, that movie is freaking hilarious.
Yeah. I don't know what happened, man. They did Dumb and Dumber, which started out kind of okay at 65%. They did Kingpin at 50%. And then they did...
Okay. Kingpin.
And then they didn't crack a movie above 60% again until 2005. After some, yeah, and Something About Mary was in 1998. So there you go. All right. So for everything we talked about today and then some, cinemageekly.com is where we'd like you to head. And that branches you out further to all of the social networks we are hanging out on. And you can feel free to join in at any time. Twitter, Facebook, Google+, YouTube, Tumblr, Instagram, all at Cinema Geekly. Of course, info@cinemageekly.com is where you can send your complaints about my pronunciation of Meryl Streep's name and any questions or comments that you may have. And if we like them and you're a nice person, we may eventually read them on an episode of the podcast. Hopefully we can refrain from the creepiness of the previous mailbag episode. So if you can help, please don't send me like an email in the next couple weeks asking like, has anyone touched you inappropriately? Anything like, yeah, if you can just avoid that until maybe Halloween or something next year, that'd be so much better. Premium, cinemageekly.com/premium. Head there. Once again, we've mentioned at the beginning, but it's worth mentioning again because it's literally just $12 for an entire year of access to a bunch of bonus podcasts. And right now we're talking about shows like Arrow and The Flash and Gotham and Doctor Who and our very own video game-centric show. And I didn't even get to ask you how you're feeling about Call of Duty because it sounds like you're playing Call of Duty right now, Glenn. Advanced Warfare. Is it going good?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done anything campaign or multiplayer, really. I just, because anytime I've been able to play it, my roommate's been here. So we've just been doing the survival rounds.
head into the campaign.
Okay.
Kevin Spacey is very Kevin Spacey-like in this game.
Good.
So that's a plus. He's essentially Frank Underwood without being the president. For the most part.
Tim Riggins is in it, so I'm a huge fan of.
There you go, sir. Of course, if podcasts aren't your thing and you're interested in helping out, we've got a big Amazon button on the right hand side of cinemageekly.com as well. And we highly advise that not only do you use it, but you bookmark it and use it for your Amazon shopping every time you want to shop there. Because Amazon gives us a kickback. Nothing changes about your experience. You don't pay anything extra. It's literally just, that link is just a way of telling Amazon who sent you, to their website. And as a thank you to us, they give us a kickback from your order. So you were actually in a way stealing from a soulless, heartless giant corporation. And who wouldn't want to do that, in the United States of America these days? So you're contributing in more than one way, in my opinion. Hey, the podcast. Also, there's more than one way to listen to us there, too, if you're interested. Of course, you can listen to us on the website, but if you want to listen to us on the go, we're available on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio, so you can check us out on your Apple or your Android or your Windows device. We're available all over the place. In fact, I think TuneIn Radio is even available on PlayStation 3s and Vitas. As an app, so you could like listen to us on your television if you so desired. That might be why we won't ever do a video podcast, because we have the faces for radio. Right, Glenn? Is this where you hop in with like speak for yourself, asshole?
No, I mean, yeah. We don't. We definitely are
radio faces. Good. Thank you. Thank you.
I guess Aaron's the only one who can get away with it.
Oh, sure,
he has to show his bod.
So. Oh, yeah. So for Glenn Beauvais, I am Anthony Lewis, and we will be back next week on the Cinema Geekly podcast.
You want to take your shirt off?
God. You have been trying that Jedi mind trick on me since the 8th grade. It doesn't work.
Oh, it works.